And you're listening to The Leveragist. This is Andrea Adams-Miller. My co-host is Gina Gaudio-Graves. And we have a really fun show today for you. You know, Gina and I have talked about publishing a lot, and we talk about the different things that we do in our lives. And one of the things that we haven't done is talk about what families do together. And so this family, C.B. Hoffman and Dan Hoffman, have created and self-published 6 faith-based ebooks, 3 audiobooks, and a short film about fashion design, a fashion designer, who was blackmailed into being an assassin and ultimately finding her way to repentance, forgiveness, and salvation. And they're doing it on their own, from writing and editing the books, designing book covers, producing the ebooks, to recording and producing audiobooks, shooting and editing video, and marketing and promotion. God inspired their dream, and they'd love to share with all of you about how they turned their dreams into a do-it-yourself project. And with all the do-it-yourselves out there today, it'll be a fun way to share about the things, you know, because you guys know that listen to us, that I also own a publishing company. And I'm always glad to hear that other people are getting their stories out, because I certainly can't publish every single book in the world. And there's different niches for different people in a different way that they want to express their voice. So I'm always happy to encourage that people get their story out, whichever way that may be. And I'm welcoming you to the show now, CB and Dan. Welcome.
Hi, well, thanks for having us.
Hello, thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what intrigued me about your story the most is I am an avid reader, and I really care about education. So, Dan, while I love your interests and want to know more about your travel blog, I'm really into your mom right now and her being an educator.
Yeah. CB's the star.
No, we're not. We're pretty much equals in this game.
So, CB, I want to hear more about your background of teaching and hear some of your experiences with teaching that ultimately led you to becoming a writer.
Okay, well, it was not my experiences with education that led me to becoming a writer. Strangely enough, I started writing because of a dream. The night before I set foot in my first classroom, I had a dream and I saw a legal pad with my handwriting, and the first line said, "She was accustomed to coming here. She was an assassin." Then I followed all the blank lines to the bottom of the legal pad, and it said, "And she fell into the arms of God." And I woke up and thought, "Well, now that's strange. What is this?" And then I realized, oh my gosh, this is a book. So the whole time I was teaching, whenever I could, which wasn't very often because I taught English and there's a lot of essays to grade and a lot of lesson planning and so forth. So what I did was whenever I had the opportunity, I found myself just longing for each opportunity to write. And I was enjoying it. And yet, oh my gosh, 14 revisions, during the whole time I was teaching, that was kind of a pain. But also worked on a master's degree during the time I was teaching. So the writing was a sidebar for me. But teaching had to be first. And the reason why I decided to get a master's degree was because my first degree was in psychology. And I thought, you know, I want to give my students the best I've got to give in the field of education. So I went and got a master's degree in language arts education, and always wanted to give the best that I had to give. So writing had to be on the side, unfortunately.
Well, I appreciate that, because I taught college myself, and my youngest daughter is getting ready to be a English teacher, a reading teacher.
Awesome.
And a math teacher. Yeah. And so books are a huge part of our
life. Wow, what a combination.
Yeah.
That's a strange combination.
Now, I know, kind of funny.
She must be whole brain, you know?
She is very intelligent. So, yeah, she started honor class math, I think it was in 4th grade. And so she was doing ridiculous math that I could not help her with, because I only went as far as, you know, geometry. And she was doing calculus, I think, in 6th grade. So it was kind of crazy for us.
Oh, yeah. Well, most people who are left-brained go toward math, and right-brainers, you know, the writing would more come in. And She must be whole-brained if she's equally good in both. That's remarkable.
Well, and that's one of the things that attracted to me to you was the educational piece and the fact that you're taking writing now and providing books for other people. So, for example, my daughter, when they all were readers, but Demaya in particular, and I remember her in school having teachers that would tell her that she wasn't allowed to read more than one book at a time. And while probably for the average person, that's probably a good thing, Demaya liked to read between 3 to 5 books simultaneously and could keep track of them. And
what's her email address? Send her some of TV's books.
She had to have been terribly frustrated by them doing that. Doesn't that remind you of them telling Einstein that he was stupid?
It is. And she didn't tell us for a long time.
Teachers need to see the uniqueness of each person and not stifle their progress. I mean, that. And they're learning inclinations. They need to get out of the way and let the kid learn.
Yeah, my middle daughter, she actually was so frustrated with the reading limitations on her that she stopped reading. And to this day, she's 22 now, and I can't get her back into it. She just was like so frustrated because of the limitations. Where my youngest one finally came to us and said and admitted to us that they had accused her of cheating on her you would go into the library and take a comprehensive test that would, you'd answer like 10 questions about how you comprehended the book. And they accused her of cheating because she read so many books. So she was way ahead of everybody else. So like she'd read 100 books when he only needed 20 and stuff like that. And she scored 100 on all of them.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Yeah.
She admitted to us that she would lie after they accused her of cheating and would miss one on purpose so they'd leave her alone, and so then we went to the school and rectify that.
Oh no. See what they should have done was tested the child. Probably have a genius score there, and it's probably above their own score, and therefore they are not comfortable with knowing how to deal with it, so they turn it into something they can handle, and that is detrimental to the student. That's really sad, you know. I remember in high school being accused of plagiarism for a book report I wrote, and my sister had to go in and say she said every line to me, and we went over, you know, if that was the best way she could say it. So I mean, they don't I can't say this about every teacher. But with your experience and my experience, and having been one too, I can also say that it is a tendency for some teachers to face something that is beyond their level of intelligence or skill set, and so they try to dummy it down so that it will be something they can deal with. And I think that's sad. They don't even know they're doing it. They're not doing it on purpose. They just...
Oh, they actually mean well. I mean, they loved Maya and thought that they were helping her by limiting her. They thought that would be helpful. And you're right, it frustrated her. So you have written a trilogy, right? It's a trilogy, is that correct?
Yeah.
So imagine someone has read two books and they're dying to read the third one. And then they're told, no, you're not allowed to read it because you've read too many books by the same author or the same series. So you have to wait.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and CB's books, I think, are written at a pretty high level of English. You know, she doesn't dumb it down. I think that there could be a renaissance of people in literary and in English studying it and in college and on a high level that would appreciate it. It's not. It's not exactly. It's somewhere in between a beach read and a literary, I don't know, tale. How would you describe it, CB?
Boy, I don't know.
I
just know. Listen, I taught primarily high school, and so I mean all that SAT vocabulary and so forth that I had to dwell on with them for, you know, 29 years. I just it's just ingrained in me. I can't help myself.
Oh, so case in point. So CB's first two sentences of her first book go, she was accustomed to coming here. She was an assassin embroiled in a sultry web of blackmail and deceit. The risks were burgeoning, jeopardizing her life, her career, her very soul, if she still had one. And ultimately what's happening is a girl's going into a church to get payoff cash for an assassination underneath a pew. The guy knows a lot about her background, and so he does that to bother her. And so I would have written a girl enters church, but CB wrote those two lines. So, you know, it's really incredible to me to see, you know, how she weaves the words together. And it's almost like poetry.
Aw, that's the sweetest thing. That's
well,
really
you know,
sweet.
Your level of vocabulary is awesome for me as well. Just simple things in the world. So my husband had wrote a letter to the editor about some of the streets in our local town, and he asked me to revise it. And I revised it so that the words were more powerful and more empowering. And by the time it was done, he's like, wow, you know, this has become your letter. And I said, well, I was afraid of that because you it lost your voice a little. Because, and he said, yeah, and he spoke it with emotion. He was, and then by the time we revised it, so I said, well, if it's mine, I'm going to revise it again. And I made it actually mine and took him completely out of it. But then I told him, because it's going to the newspaper, chances are that his letter would be more appreciated and read by more people than mine, because the level of vocabulary I used did not necessarily warrant the average reader.
Yeah, right.
I see that.
Yeah. That's one thing you have to guard against as an editor. Now, I did do editing and writing before I became a teacher, and I've edited just about all my life, and it's that is something you have to watch out against is even in helping kids learn their voice in writing, is to not give them their voice or not revise their voice, help them keep it, but to develop it to the highest level that they would normally want to reach with it. That's a hard thing in editing, is to not get your own voice in it, and I do appreciate that problem.
Yeah, I love that, because I've ghostwrote for several different authors in different genres, and the one guy that I edited for and ghostwrote for years, I mean, he would like write a letter or a paragraph or something, and I would take it and turn it into a chapter. As I worked for him for a long time and really knew his voice, but he used the words get and have all the time, and I knew I could only change so many of them or I would lose him. And so I really had to keep his voice in there. So I'm an actress as well, so I really had to focus on becoming him and his best him.
Yeah. Get it kind of like role playing. Yeah.
I hope that paid well.
That would be hard.
It was a very fun job. And then I've done some, most of mine have been in the business world. So both financial, real estate, and business. And so there is a different form of vocabulary. And that's why I like yours, because I have more of a business and science vocabulary. So, you know, the fact that in your second sentence from the chapter one, you know, the risks were burgeoning, jeopardizing her life, her career, her very soul. I love those words. Because people don't use them on a regular basis, and they're beautiful words, the vocabulary themselves. I'd love for
you guys are encouraging me. Wow.
Gotta go get to work.
Yeah.
We should. And,
what were you going to say?
Oh, that's okay. I love it that you're excited that we're so complimentary of you.
I need encouragement. We all do, right?
You know, and that's one of the things. I had the opportunity to see you on some of your television shows, and you're absolutely adorable because you seem extremely humble.
That's true.
Yeah, well, and I see you passing the buck to your son all the time, you know, like, oh, no, let him answer.
Oh, yeah.
And she's kind of jumping right over top of her, so.
Yeah. That's all right.
She gets 1 second to answer a question or I'm going to take over.
Hey, you know, Dan, I always call Dan the motivator. You know, he really is. This first book, You know, if the last line ends with, and she fell into the arms of God, how did it become a trilogy? Well, I thought it was going to be one book, right? And Dan was the one who said, oh, no, you know, there's a lot more we can do with this. And this has to be a trilogy.
CB outlined like 25 different plot points. And I was like, there's no way you're going to get this done inside a normal book length. And I was just thinking it would be too much work for one book anyway. So I was thinking, you know, if we're going to have to design the cover and the look and the feel. And this was back in 2008, 2009, you know, before, like, I'm talking Kindle version one. It was like $400. And then I remember seeing in New York ads for the iPad version one and thinking, okay, I think these digital books is really going to work. I was like, I don't know what to do with an iPad, but I want one. And so I was just thinking it'd be a lot of work for one book. So thinking, okay, how can we make a trilogy out of this and then incorporate all of CB's plot points? And, you know, I think we could, you know, I actually think there's some characters in there, Daniel Gother and Mark Truman. And there's some characters in there I think we could completely have spinoff series.
What's interesting is each one of those is based upon my family. So Daniel Gother in the book is none other than Dan, who is speaking to you now.
Well, yes. Based loosely on actual people.
Yeah, and Mark Truman is his younger brother, our younger son.
Oh, and speaking of reading, my brother Mark was reading full books. How old was he when he started reading?
Four.
At four. He was reading words like Egypt and, I mean,
and
he was
Pharaoh.
Yeah,
and
he was already a year ahead in school, and he was reading at, like, the next year's level.
Yeah. That really surprised me. I was so busy into going through my internship for teaching, and I didn't realize the gains that Mark was making.
His teachers like that either, did they?
No.
He was too far above the other class.
Well, it does cause trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a regular age and you're put into a kindergarten or first grade classroom, and yet you are reading the instructions and knowing what to do, and they're learning that bat means, you know. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, it makes it, I can see it from a teacher's perspective, it makes it difficult on the teacher, and it makes it hard on the kid, and I'm sure you experienced this with Demaya. And you have another daughter?
Oh yeah, I have two, Destiny and Devaney.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, when they go beyond and exceed what the teacher is trying to teach at that grade level, then what you have is a child who's torn between their age and how they fit in socially, and they can be a little awkward. And yet they are smarter than the older kids that they're thrown in with. So that's hard for everybody, really. But once they're out of school and so forth, just watch them shine. Watch them sail on by, because these kids are they have wings. They really do. And they don't want to try to hold them down.
Well, that's another thing, too, is you, in some of the videos that I saw of you, you refer to your students. Was it Riverside?
Oh, East River. Well, see, I taught two different high schools. One was University High School, and then the last one was East River.
In Central Florida, out by UCF.
Yeah, where all of this is around
Eastside.
University of Central Florida, but... yeah, and I promised them the book Too Many Choices about quadruplets with the last name of Choice. Too Many Choices.
That's a play on words.
I loved it because I always wanted to write a second person comedy. I mean, all these different things, so I decided to just wrap them up into the one novel. And so it's full of high school drama, which... And don't forget, to high schoolers, that's very serious stuff. But, you know, I was trying hard not to be too, I was being humorous, but I was trying not to make fun of them, you know. So it was fun to write, though.
And CB's books never have any sex or drugs or cussing. And there's romance, but no sex. I don't think writing a sex scene with your mom would work. But she just wants to make sure that if any of her students ever, you know, read them, and they do, and or listen, that, you know, there's nothing that would make them blush, or they would say, oh, that's not consistent with, you know, who CB was. And, you know, so we'd like to keep it friendly.
Plus, yeah. Plus, I wanted I didn't want to be a hypocrite. I used to say to them all the time, it's best for you when you get to the point where you want to get married, that you marry someone who is also your best friend. Because when all the butterflies and everything wear off, you better have somebody there that you know well and that you can depend on and so forth. And so my books have a lot about developing relationships, not just, you know, I don't want this. We went out one time and we hopped into bed and then, you know, whatever. And another good reason for that too, saw that happen a couple of times while I was at university high school. There were two kids that were killed, and they were 8 years apart. One was in gang rivalry, but the other one was members of the same culture fighting over a girl that they were having relations with. And I kept trying to tell these kids, that's not the way to go. And you're not old enough, you're not mature enough to handle this. Wait till you get married, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of made a point of not having these quick relationships and jump into bed kind of things in the books, because that's just not the best way for them to go. But anyway.
You know, that makes me laugh. I think of my oldest daughter, Destiny. She had to read, I can't remember the name of the book. It was about an architect. Everybody loved it. It was really a thick book, like 2-3 inches paperback, you know, the traditional paperback size.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the book instantly started off with this. I'm like, the guy is just screwing one woman after the other and dumping her and doesn't even know her name. And I was like, why is this, like, it was just a horrible book. And everybody went on and on about it. And I'm like, I am very open-minded. I own another business about dating and relationships and intimacy. So I'm totally open-minded. But it was boring. Yeah. I'm like, okay already.
It didn't
have any value. And it wasn't even good.
And, you know, sometimes I think that can be a crutch, too. Like, if you're watching some of these shows, I don't want to call any out by name, but it's like they just substitute cuss words when it's like they ran out of vocabulary words. You know what I mean?
They're just trying to startle and
you got to start off with a sex scene to hook you.
Yeah, sensationalism sometimes can be used to cover any real talent that is there in the writing. You know, if you've got a lot of suspense and mystery and all these things to keep a reader engaged, you don't necessarily need all that sensational stuff.
That's making me laugh because I don't watch television anymore. Although this morning my husband had the TV on and I can't even remember what it was. Diagnosis Murder was on, and then it intrigued me. I love murder mysteries, and I used to work in law enforcement. I was like engaged, and I caught myself for like 15 minutes not moving, and I'm like, okay, I really need to go. I have stuff to do. And you know, they always show him flirting with someone, but there's no, you know, nothing that goes on. You know, when you watch a Columbo or
Murder was Dick Van Dyke, I think.
Yeah, and like Quincy Jones and all of those. I love those shows, and they always were super flirty, but they were always clean. And yet they were intriguing, and it cracks me up that those shows can't be equally fun today.
Yeah, well,
I know.
CB's trying.
I know. That's sad. I think that's really sad. Yeah.
So, So Dan, did you already have, you know, from looking at what you do, I'm a photographer as well, so I found you intriguing, and with your travels, I've only been to 37 countries. One of my business partners has been to 103, so I'm I want to know where all you've traveled.
Oh my goodness. So my wife and I, we sold a one bedroom in New Jersey in 2017 in December. And then we hit up Canada and we came down to Florida for a few months to work with CB. And then we went to Brazil, where my wife is from. And from there, Argentina, Chile, Peru, we hit up Mexico. And I have a great aunt who lives in Hawaii who I had never visited. So we popped over there and saw her. And then Southeast Asia. So Philippines, Singapore, Hong Kong, Macau, Indonesia, a couple of islands in Indonesia, including Bali. Where else? Vietnam.
I've heard Vietnam and Cambodia are gorgeous to photograph.
Yeah.
China was a previous trip, but I have been to China. We didn't get to Cambodia. We really want to. But, it's just, one thing we figured out is that if you're trying to turn it into a business, that a year is a really long time. You need to be able to plant a little bit, because if you're trying to edit video on a bumpy bus, it's going to get old real quick. So you need to, for every day that you wake up at 0400 and try to catch a sunrise, and then you're out all day in a rental car with a driver, and then you're back at, after dark, 10 o'clock at night, you definitely need a day off the next day. Don't make that a travel day. So we learned a lot, but photography has been a passion for a really long time. But we're trying to get we want to visit a lot of places. We wanted to get to Europe, but it just seems like it's a little bit too expensive. So we just got to figure out where money's coming from and where to go basically.
We'll have to talk, because I've been able to find ridiculously cheap flights. Like the last time I went to Paris, I booked it 2 weeks before we went for $297 round trip.
Wow.
Oh, you're kidding.
Wow.
But you have to be flexible and adaptable with your schedule. So I own my own business, so that allows me that. But if you have a 9-to-5, forget it.
Let me interject. One of my really good friends lived in Vancouver, British Columbia for his whole life. And he has two sons. He was a single dad, raised his sons himself. And as his sons were leaving the nest and he found that he was going to be by himself, he said, I've always wanted to travel the world. I have my own business. I can go wherever I want. But then as he started exploring it, he realized how costly it might get.
Oh, yeah.
So my friend found a site, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. I could text him and get it for you if you want. It is a site that allows you to find opportunities to do house sitting all over the world. And one of the things that's the key to getting accepted to house sit, because when you're house sitting, you get to stay in the house for free. Usually you're doing it because you're taking care of their pets. But in order to get some of the primo assignments, you need to have really good reviews. And when you're just getting started with it, you don't have reviews. So to help him there, he found another site that has opportunities where you go and do work for free room and board. Well, he's really skilled at web design and podcasting. So he was traveling around the world helping companies put new websites on. It might be a yoga studio, and he'd get room and board in the yoga studio because they had a little studio apartment set up. And sometimes he'd be able to stay for a couple of months for free.
Wow, the other second
and
one,
the work he was doing gave him the reviews he needed to then be able to do the house sitting. He has been on the road full time for 3 years without a home base, just either doing the working stuff or the house sitting for free.
Wow.
He thinks
that's
it's saving
amazing.
Him like $30,000 a year.
Yeah, probably. We looked into something called couch surfing, and we did that at a few places, and it's the same deal. You're supposed to have a bunch of reviews, but we found some guys in Argentina, and I think actually they were all in Argentina, but it just really wasn't for us. One guy had a dog that wouldn't leave us alone, and it's interesting too, because a lot of these guys. Well, I mean, with what you're talking about, it sounds like they're not home. But with couch surfing,
they aren't. You get the whole place to yourself. And often you get their cars, too.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That, that's a lot of trust. I don't know if I would just give someone the keys like that. But
which is why the reviews are so crucial, right?
Wow.
Well, Dan, you might have an opportunity because you guys are getting really good reviews for yourselves with you being on radio and television and with you showing up.
Cool.
People will like that. And then they'll love your mom because, she's an educator, so she automatically gives you some bonuses.
And you just give her the review. She'll get on me. That's cool.
I love it. So tell us more about, you know, the do-it-yourself and then what led you to decide to do it all yourself, because it seemed like you had a little expertise already going on and it was just a matter of you building upon it, Dan.
Yeah, you know, so it kind of I grew up being a do-it-yourselfer. My dad was always helping me build skateboard ramps in the garage, and you know, and we're just a long family. My dad and his older brother and their father actually built a cabin in West Virginia. It took them 10 years. They would drag everything up there in a trailer behind their Volkswagen van again, and for over 10 years they built this cabin. And so I've just come from a long line of do-it-yourselfers. And, you know, and then even while I was going to school, I always worked and I always had side jobs and, you know, just been a hustler since day one. And so I was up in New York, and CP had been writing these books all along, and she had lined up a publisher, and the publisher got some devastating health news and then had to close the business before CP's book ever went into print. And so I was just talking with her. I had just finished design school in New York and I was working full time. And I said, hey, you know, read some of your book. And she read those two lines, and I couldn't believe it. And then so, you know, that became like she read the whole first chapter, and then, you know, before you know it, the whole first book, and we were comparing notes and talking about where it could go. So it was just kind of like it grew organically out of the love of the books. And, you know, CB having, you know, a master's in English ed and a degree in psych and all this teaching experience and editing, you know, so that part came naturally. And then I always wanted to do graphic design and advertising. So, you know, I took another stab at the book covers because I'd been designing some really bad ones back before I had my degree and before I knew what I was doing. And so I took a new stab at it and came up with the one with the girl with the gun. That's actually a friend who I photographed. And, you know, back when I was still, you know, just really falling in love with photography. And, man, I really wish I could redo that one. But so it just kind of just kept, you know, chipping away at it all along. And now today, I mean, so we have the six books, the one's the trilogy, and then we have the high school drama, and then CB has one called Royal Conspiracies. It's about a princess slave. And so, I mean, she's got to write more on that. But, you know, it's just like we just keep adding to our to-do list. Actually, we're a few days away from finishing an audio drama podcast called Fashion Assassin Podcast. And so, so it's basically like the audiobook, but my dad and my brother and I are doing all the voices, and we subscribed to a sound effect library where we have gunshots and footsteps and squealing car tires and doors, and, you know, we have background music, and so we're gonna launch that, and that'll be you know, free to listen to. And so it's funny, we just keep dreaming up all of these things to do, and then marketing and promotion takes up so much time. And, you know, thank God my wife is on board, and Mark and everybody's helping now. But, you know, it's just like a never-ending to-do list, basically. So,
well, you've got me totally excited about the radio drama. Have you ever heard of The Whistler? It was a radio drama from, I don't even know what year, a long, long time ago. And when I was in college, I took creative dramatics, and then I took a radio class, and we redid 13 episodes of The Whistler.
Oh,
and so we made all the sound effects, and it was so fun because, you know, I learned how, if I had a 8x10 sheet of metal or an 11x14 sheet of metal, and you just hold the top and wiggle it, you can make thunder and lightning rumbles depending on the size. And how we would take shoes and rocks and put them in a box, and then have the shoes within our hands and walk and make different pavement sounds, you know. And I had my dad come in, and my dad was the crickets with his voice. He could do the whistling that sounded like crickets, and it was so fun. It was so
that
much fun.
Great.
So I would love to hear you and your brother and dad and everybody doing that. That's so,
yeah,
so much fun. Yeah, I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah, that's called a Foley artist, right? Isn't that what they call that? A Foley artist, the guy who used to make all those noises? I'm not sure.
So. I think
so.
No, I'm not for sure. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
That's the glory of having a internet in front of you.
Exactly. You know, and so, like, I think that they use
snap celery for bones breaking and stuff like that. But, you know, so we subscribe to this library. So, like, I think all of the noises were from this library. But, you know, there were a few things that we kept talking about, oh, we should do it ourselves. And, like, lighting a cigar in one scene and then extinguishing it. And, you know, we kept thinking, oh, you know, we could do that ourselves. And, you know, but I'm like, I don't think I want to light a cigar in the studio. And I definitely don't want to put it out in water in the studio. So, you know, we ended up making do. But I think we got about 95% of what we needed. And, you know, we're able to, sometimes it's even funny with the footsteps. If you get a pace that's too fast, you can just like shorten the track and then duplicate it and make your own footsteps. You know what I mean? So sometimes you have to get really creative. But yeah, it was so much fun. And I really love how good CB got at it. Because so we bought all this equipment, like the studio condenser mic and the headphone amp and the little pre-Sonos where the audio interface for the computer. So the mic is plugged into there. And then like early on back. So the first three books of the trilogy are audio books actually available on Audible. And so we got all this stuff because right after we did the first book, I was like, okay, you know, audio is becoming a big, big thing. And even more so now with Alexa and the homes. And by the way, we had Alexa Sylvan way before Amazon had Alexa. Yeah. But anyway, so you know, I said, you gotta record them as audiobooks. And CB was down because, you know, when we were growing up, she would read Uncle Remus and she would do you know, like the illustrated kids, like the Disney's like Splash Mountain, like Brer Rabbit, Brer Fox, and she would do different voices for all the characters and all this. And I was looking into how much it was to produce an audiobook, and I reached out to a couple of people, and you know, you're talking 2008, but they wanted it was $3,000 for 6 hours of finished audio, and it's a lot of work. You know what I mean? It's like you can't just sit there and record 8 hours a day and then you have to edit it and everything. But, you know, I was thinking, okay, we already have three, you know, we're talking about a trilogy of three books. So, you know, there's $9,000. And CB had written Royal Conspiracies during a summer. And so I'm like, okay, CB's going to write 20 books. We're not about to spend $3,000 to turn each one into an audio book. So so we got the stuff. Yeah, and sent it down to her. And she and GarageBand comes free on the Mac. She would go to the Apple store every day. Sometimes,
and drive them crazy.
Yeah, sometimes twice a day. And you actually recorded the first book probably three times.
Oh,
I was,
Yeah. Four times.
Yeah, her son's a very demanding producer. Wanted to make sure
the one
perfect.
Speaking to you.
Yeah. I mean, I must have made her redo the opening paragraph 500 times. But anyway, so she really learned that, and now with the audio drama podcast, she'll be sitting there with her headphones, you know, editing it, and I'm just really proud of how far she's come with the audio.
I love doing the technical work with the tracks and the voiceovers and the adding the sound effects and the music and all this. Mm-hmm. I think that is fascinating.
And when you listen to it, I have to do, the villain is a Frenchman, and I have to do a really bad French accent. I took Spanish, and I'm learning some Portuguese, so I don't have a lot of experience doing French. So we have to do sentence by sentence five times a piece for me, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Well, doing theater, what helped me with voices is I would usually meet someone who had an accent that I needed to have for a certain show, and then I would just listen to them and then figure out how to place my tongue and lips differently to make the same kind of sound. And so my Russian is more like this, and my Polish is a little more rounded, and Turkish is more on the side and sounds like this. And they all laugh, and they say, you know, it'll do. And, you know, and then I, you know, working with my British people and getting different areas of Britain, you know, when you look at England, there's different sounds, different depending on where they're at, on how fast or how slow, and you know, how Cockney or not, and you know, and so much fun.
Wow, good
like
for you. That reminds me.
By the way, it is a Foley artist is the sound person who creates sound or recreates it if something's lost. Like example, when a voice is re-recorded, which is funny, I didn't recall that. I did a voiceover, which it's been 10 years, so I can do it now. When there was a thing with Carol Burnett that somebody was doing, I didn't know until I got there. I was called and hired to come in. They said that they thought I could do it, and I was paid to go, "Oh, Horton," And I only needed to say, "Oh, Horton," but it was dropped out and I had to do it. And so I asked them to put the video up on screen and they go, "You do know that's not an actual voice." I said, "I know, but I'm a method actor."
put
it up on the screen and I just matched the mouth of the animation and listened to Carol Burnett's voice until I could do that "Oh, Horton" piece. And then so my voice was used to recreate whatever had gotten lost for some kind of, it wasn't for the actual movie, but it was like a clip from the movie was used for another like commercial piece and it had gotten screwed up.
Great.
They accidentally deleted it and needed someone to recreate it. So that was so much fun. We did it in 3 takes. It was really fun. So,
I bet you got a lot more work from that, didn't you?
It was a lot of fun. I really, really loved it. And so there's, voiceovers and. A little bit from it. I didn't really pursue it, although recently I've had a lot of people tell me I need to do a lot more with voice and radio and television. So, in fact, I'm going to be starting a 3rd radio show as well.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Punishment.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. In fact, as soon as I leave you guys, I'm doing a television show that's over the internet. So the second, Gina's going to take the last 15 minutes. And so she's been saving all of her questions so that I can jump off to get ready for television. But one of the things I really enjoyed with you guys. Yeah. I love it that Gina and I can develop relationships with people on our show in a way so that we really get to know who you are so people can fall in love with who you are and how you create and how to, you know, reach out to you because it's really awesome what you guys are doing. And
would you please go to CB, B as in boy, CB Hoffman, HOFFMANN.com. And make sure we have your email address so we can let you know the minute that our audio drama podcast goes live.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you what you think about it.
Definitely, that sounds so much fun. I would absolutely enjoy that. Yeah. And if you ever need a guest voice or sound person, let me know. I'd be happy to fill in.
We know.
Yes, we do.
I'm not sure we can afford you, though.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, there's always kinds of things that we can always figure out how we can work together. I do enough in the world, and so does Gina. Gina and I both consult and help people with books. She has a merchant account service that helps people. She helps with JVing. You know, both her and I are – we got our hands in 20 different fields. In fact, I'm an executive director of a movement called the Keep Smiling Movement, and certainly we love to honor people who do great things. So that's a whole other way that we could reach out, and if you're traveling, I can send cards with you and you can take pictures of people who are holding the Keep Smiling cards and get yourself more traction that way too.
That's good.
Please do. Well, connect.
Lots of fun things in the world. So what haven't we, well, I mean, obviously we've just been really forming a relationship and letting people hear about, you know, what cool people exist in the world. So, you know, when you decided to actually, you know, make this a business and where these other books came, you know, from you. So the first one you said was, you know, like divine intervention that came down. How did the other ones just fall out of you?
Well, you know, Dan was the one who motivated for the trilogy and actually had to go back and revise the first book, Consuming Fire, with a few little lines, adding a bulletproof vest and a few little things like that, that made it possible to revive her for the rest of the books. And then the Too Many Choices was a promise to my last English classes because I had a lot of football players and cheerleaders and so forth, and I promised them I was going to write something about them. So that's how that developed. And then Royal Conspiracies came about simply because I've always been like an Errol Flynn, swashbuckler lover.
Princess Bride.
Oh, my gosh, I love that movie. Yeah. So that was just my love for that.
And CB, I'm noticing a theme. Most of your the heroes in your books are heroines. Most of them are females.
Well, yeah, but you know what's interesting about that is I always have two or more strong male supporting roles along with the main female character.
Awesome. Well,
so,
we love that.
It's kind of equal.
You know, we always
we love
the men that support what we're doing.
right.
You definitely raise two sons to do that, since they both are helping you with your book products.
Yeah.
I'm learning from having been married for 7 years that women are usually right. So.
Oh. I hope his wife is worth it.
Yeah. We know we're not always right, but we appreciate it when you just go ahead and let it be.
Yeah.
So tell me about, you know, what are some of the challenges of working with family?
Learning to let Dan be the boss.
You know, and I think creative collaboration is a big part of it. You know, I know that CB likes to write kind of stream of consciousness, and she kind of intrinsically knows where she's going with it. But once she, once we started coming up with a partnership, we started saying, you know, I want to help her with major plot points and kind of big picture stuff. And she goes through and does most of the writing. So I just have to know up to what point we're working and what the final point is. And so I think that that's also been good for her to kind of map it out and kind of know where it's going. And then she's free to write, you know, all of the in-between stuff. So I think that that's actually a benefit. I think the challenge of that was initially when she was just reading it to me and I was like, oh, could we do this? Could we not do that? You know, I was very sensitive of her feelings and wasn't even sure if she wanted my feedback. And then, you know, we started saying, hey, this is working really well. So now I'm tactful and tell her what I think in love, but you know, sometimes I'm thinking, you know, this doesn't work, or you know, perhaps like dialogue
sometimes he's not as tactful as
yeah,
he used to be.
Yeah. But I think it works. You know, it's kind of like that's one of the things I was learning in design school too, is you have to keep pushing everything. You know, you always want it to be done. You want to move on to the next thing. But if it really matters, and it does in this case, so, you know, I want to just keep pushing. You know, if she has to redo the audiobook 3 times, then, you know, I don't care. You know,
yeah, but I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work, but nobody else is going to care either. They're just going to decide if it's good or bad, or if they want to listen to it. So,
well, and
you
he's
know.
Usually right. That's the thing that galls me the most. I get irritated sometimes, but I remind myself to just sit back and watch, because most of the time it proves out that he's right.
Well, you know, but I don't really have to help her with her writing that much. Most of the time it's just kind of conceptual and where it's going, and you know, and brainstorming is one of my favorite things to do. Say, okay, so what happens next? You know, and you mentioned that you know, the nemesis has a brother and he's in prison, and you know, so it's, I think that stuff's all really, really fun stuff to do.
Yeah, my approach I have found, and it's not like I determined it in advance, it just kind of developed in me. I like to let the characters become alive and take on, you know, their own personalities and characters and so forth. And sometimes that will guide the plot a little bit for me about, you know, how they would handle, if I have a scene coming up that I really want to have happen, I try to have it happen according to the way those particular characters would enter into it.
And that's a gorgeous thing. I certainly love it. And I'm going to ask Gina to step in and ask all the other questions she's been holding and saving it up for me, so I can do that other television show. I'll still be able to listen till the end. But I wanted to, you know, take the time now to say thank you, guys. I really enjoyed forming this relationship.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great to meet you.
Yes, of course. Gina, are y'all there?
I'm here.
Awesome.
I haven't read any of your books, Stevie, although India tells me that you recently sent me one, so I am looking forward to it. But I am a giant fan of faith-based and inspirational movies. And I watch,
you're gonna love it,
4 or 5 of them every weekend, literally. So,
wow.
Great.
Wow. I'm sure that this is going to become the next big feature film, so get it while it's hot.
Right, right.
You can tell people you read
it
way back.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we actually did.
Are you looking into that?
We made a 5-minute clip of our own, and right now, doing the audio drama podcast is taking most of our time. But I think we're about at the point where we can let that fly on its own, and maybe look into some other possibilities.
I would say we're not actively pitching a screenplay, but hopefully through getting the word out and building a base, I'm confident that God's working all that stuff together behind the scenes at the right time.
Well, you know, two of my favorite actors that are in that genre of film are Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain. And
both of
them I've seen interviews of, and they now both are producing movies as well. Kevin Sorbo says that oftentimes authors reach out to him with the gift of a book, and that then turns into his approaching them about turning it into a movie. So might want to send books to Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get our production assistant, a.k.a. my dad, onto the case. John,
there
send books
go.
To Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain, stat.
Hey, thank
Fantastic.
You for that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He's already sent them.
All right. I'm going to
well,
do that
I am
today.
A natural connector, and if I knew either of them, I would gladly do it myself, because I have a feeling this is the kind of material that both of them would really be in love with.
That's cool. Don't show them the YouTube video we made. I mean, I'm proud of it, but these guys are on another level.
Yeah.
We had 1 hour from this church, and we ended up taking 1.5 hours. We had 1 camera. I was the cameraman and 2 actors. And my wife is actually playing Alexa Sylvan. And then I had a buddy who was involved with law enforcement. And so it was really cool. He comes in and the lights are off in the church and he's got his gun drawn and a flashlight next to it. He's scanning back and forth. And my wife is hiding behind the pews with you can see the light going over her head and she's got a gun drawn. And it was definitely fun, but it's definitely not ready for mass production.
It's not Dean Cain level, no.
Yeah.
Too funny. But it's the quality of the writing that they'd be more interested in,
yes.
Not the video, right?
Right. Yeah, hopefully.
Right.
Now, in the show notes for today, one of the things that Andrea mentioned is that you help with self-publishing of books. Is that for your own books or for other people's books as well?
Kind of both.
Well, we are a lot of the things that we've learned the hard way, we're putting together in a series of PDFs, and we're going to make some blog posts. And if you sign up, if you go to CB Hoffman, and that's HOFFMANN.com/how-to, you'll see we really only have one up, and that's on writing. And, it goes into getting it copyrighted and, before you share it with people. And we want to make some more for cover design, for how to take better photos, for doing a little video editing. We want to make a whole series of guides that we can help people with, but we're not actually accepting projects, other books.
What we're trying to do is give prospective writers the tools they need to do it themselves, and hopefully to have the courage to just follow. If they follow what we've got, it's all bulleted kind of outline, and if they follow it, that can at least get them started and get them in the right direction. And soon we'll be putting up more on how to create your own book cover, how to do a better website, how to do the photography, all the things you need to know. So we are working hard on trying to get all this stuff together.
About four or five years ago, I recorded a course called the Entrepreneurial Authoring Course. If you go to askggg.com/DUEAW, askggg.com/DUEAW, you'll find the a funnel there. There's a four-part free video series. There's an upsell for $10 to one of the modules, and then the whole workshop is recorded, and I want to say it's around $197. I would be happy to gift it to the two of you so you can take a look at it. It's probably all stuff you guys already know. But more than anything, I want to gift it to you so that you can see if it could be of help to some of your people that are going through your how-to material. It's a fabulous course.
All right. Well, that took a lot of effort.
You know what? So I'm writing it down. So it's ask, A-S-K, and then GGG.com. And then that was D-U-E-A-W?
You got it.
I just typed that in, and for some reason it's saying it's not found.
Well, let me go take a look and see why. Hang on.
G-G-G-D-U-E.
Talk about something while I'm typing.
I got a 404. I don't know if perhaps I mistyped it.
It could just be me.
Okay. No worries,
it's
but that sounds
link
very
I haven't
very
gotten. I've not given out in a long time, so.
I want to do more. I want every one of my books to wind up being on Audible.com. And right now, I've only got the trilogies up. So there's just so much on the so much on our plates that still needs to be done. Dan wants a sequel to every one of them. So you know, plus I'm trying to write a sci-fi with Dan and our. Younger brother Mark, I'm not real good with sci-fi. So since they are, you know, we can combine efforts. Maybe I'll learn from them in attempting that genre because I think sci-fi is tough.
I think sci-fi is tough too. And the reason that you're getting a 404 is because they gave you the wrong link. It's in a different order. It's still askggg.com/EAWDU. EAWDU. And the sales page for the whole workshop is just EAW. askggg.com/EAW.
We've got it now. Thank you. Yeah.
I've got over 4,000 AskGGG links. Some go to articles and free stuff. Some go to products that I've created over the years. I've worked with tons and tons and tons of authors over the years. And for quite some time, I had an imprint of Motivational Press. So we were actually publishers at Directions University Press. So it's certainly something that, you know, I've got a lot of experience in helping people with their books, whether that's getting them published, running bestseller campaigns, doing book launches, figuring out how to use your book to generate more business for your business, you know, pretty much the whole gamut. So if I can ever help you guys, let me know. It's been around for a long time, since the late 90s.
Wow.
Oh, we've got a lot to learn yet.
I just signed CB up for your email list.
Awesome.
This is going to be great.
I am so glad that you guys have been here and shared everything that you shared with everyone today. I commend you for taking the plunge and getting into a whole new endeavor, Stevie. What a switch from being a teacher.
Well, I got to tell you, though, I'm really, really enjoying the change. I really am. It's more creative. Challenging, and I enjoy that. I've always enjoyed
creation. And thanks for having us on the show. This is really, really informative and fun, and just really enjoyed it.
Oh boy, it's been a learning experience. Yeah.
And just one more time, you can find them at cbhoffman, HOFFMANN.com. Thank you for having joined us today. Andrea and I will be back same time, same place next week for another episode of Leverage Masters. Have a fantastic week, everybody.
Tune in next week for another episode of Leverage Masters. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook on our Leverage Black Book page to keep up with the latest. We'll see you next time on Leverage Masters.